We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam?
Yes.
You have 30 seconds to run through these aisles. Your team will get a $100 bonus if you can bring back a specially marked item named Friday.
It's Friday.
Adam, what's up?
I didn't get it back in 20 seconds, so I didn't get the big bonus, but I got it back within 30.
That's good. So you got $50.
Right.
And 10 seconds added to the sweep.
Which is what's really important, because that gives you the chance to win the big money, a.k.a. $5,000.
Oh, man. Glad to be back with you. We have a fun show coming up. We have a really good interview with Harris Barton, former Tar Heel offensive lineman. Adam, I honestly think one of the best players to play at Carolina that you don't think about immediately when you think about the best players to play at Carolina. Does that make sense?
Unless you're a big college football Hall of Fame aficionado.
Boom. Harris Barton, one of the nominees for the – he's on the ballot for the College Football Hall of Fame, one of two Tar Heels along with Julius Peppers, who is on the ballot this year. And – a wild story about how Harris Barton ended up on the ballot. So we will hear that and many other things, including stories from his 12-year career in the NFL, all with the San Francisco 49ers. He's gone on to a very successful business career after that. He's going to talk about all that in just a little bit.
I really like talking to Harris.
I did too. I didn't know Harris Barton at all before speaking with him. And I think you, I hope, will leave that interview the same way Adam and I did, going, man, I kind of like Harris. What a cool dude.
Yep.
Want to hang out with that guy. So I think you'll enjoy that coming up.
The people we interview who we come away feeling that way, they don't always feel the same way when we show up on their porch and are knocking on the window like,
Mr. Barton.
Dan Cortez. It's Jones and Adam. We seem like bros, and so we're here for lunch.
John Grisham. Yeah. Can I borrow your Netflix password? I want to watch Supermarket Sweep.
I see you in there. I see you, John. Can we come in? You said we were going to be in the book. You got a new book coming out.
So you'll enjoy that interview. You will. You hear me? You're going to have a good time with that. Adam has a list. And Adam, I've realized a grave mistake that I've made.
Ooh.
But I will rectify that mistake coming up in a little bit.
Okay.
Hey, guys, we're going to jump in here. Adam and I had actually already recorded the podcast.
Two weeks ago.
That was from 2017, what you heard earlier. Before some big news came out that we felt like needed to be included on this podcast, and Adam, you have been nose to the grindstone helping break this information, so I'm going to let you describe the details, but the 10,000 foot view is basically Roy Williams is footing the bill for the spring scholarship student athletes to return, and wow, what a generous move by Coach Williams and his family.
And I think the first, second, and third thing you need to know is that Roy Williams wanted nothing to do with this getting out. He called Bubba Cunningham on the day that spring sports were canceled in March and said that he and Wanda Williams had been talking about it, and he just couldn't imagine being on a spring team, of which Carolina has so many good ones, who were going to get to compete for a national championship. And now, not only were they not going to win a championship, they weren't even going to get to try. And so he made it clear to Bubba Cunningham that he and Mrs. Williams wanted to pay for any spring sports senior who wants to come back to school in 2021. And if you remember, this is something we've talked about a couple times over the last few months, that was a big financial issue facing a lot of schools, many of which, well, certainly at least some of which, have told some spring sports athletes, we can't pay for everyone. And Carolina, right from the start, said they were planning to do so. Well, now we know why. Because Roy Williams had called Bubba Cunningham and said that he wanted to do this. He gave Bubba Cunningham only one restriction, which was that he could not tell another living soul who had done it. And so I think Bubba Cunningham kept it to himself for a few days and then said, well, you know, I would really like to tell the chancellor. And I think begrudgingly, he was finally allowed to do that. And then it just stayed where it was for the next few months. All the spring sports seniors were told they could come back. The Rams Club wasn't even told. They were told there was an anonymous donor, which, you know, at some point you got to tell the Rams Club because they're writing the check. So now everyone knows, I think partially because there was kind of some unfair stuff that was written about certain coaches that had or hadn't contributed anything to their university during this time. And that just wasn't fair. And it wasn't right to allow that to go out into the world as quote unquote the truth when it clearly wasn't. And I think the other thing you need to know is this is really only the tip of the iceberg in terms of things like this Roy Williams has done that you don't necessarily know about, but that happened anyway, but he has asked for them to be completely quiet. And so yesterday, Bubba Cunningham met with all the spring sports coaches by Zoom and told them what had happened and who the anonymous donor was. And then the release was put out yesterday afternoon. And now Coach Williams is probably a little grouchy that everyone knows what he and Wanda did.
So with that as the background, we wanted to speak to one of those student athletes who was going to have the opportunity to return, even though, in this case, her season was cut short as a senior. And so we spoke to Katie Hogue of the Carolina women's lacrosse team and chatted with her just about kind of how things went down when she learned that her season would be canceled, how she dealt with that, and then when she learned that she'd have an opportunity to return, and then when she learned that it was Coach Williams who had been the one who funded that opportunity to return. And so she, of course, is giving you a first-person account of all of this, much better than Adam and I can, speaking in generality. So we're going to talk to Katie. When that interview is over, we'll transition you back into the conversation we were having and back into the flow of what we had originally done for the podcast. And, of course, still coming up, everything else that we said, Harris Barton, Adam's List. We have a special little tidbit for you at the end of the show as well. So all of that coming up. But first, we'll get to our extra conversation. This is like almost like a little behind-the-scenes extra version DVD special of the pod, Adam.
It's what's above gold feed.
Yeah, platinum.
Yep.
This is a platinum feed.
Yep.
So here's our conversation with Tar Heel women's lacrosse senior Katie Hoag.
We can talk about the gift to spring sports by Roy Williams all we want to, but Jones, neither you nor I, really even if you put us together, are not athletic enough to actually be a spring sport athlete. So we wanted to talk to someone who actually has a sense of what this means. So Katie Hoag from women's lacrosse, a team that was undefeated, ranked number one in the country, poised to make a national title run, nice enough to join us. Katie, thanks so much for giving us a couple minutes today.
Of course, my pleasure.
How are you doing? First of all, where are you? Where do you stand in relationship to coming back to school?
So I'm home in New York with my family on Long Island, and I will be coming back to school probably in like 2 weeks now, as the start day of school got pushed up. But yeah, I'm planning on returning and continuing my undergraduate career in order to play another year.
And can you describe for us what that day was like when Coach Levy got all y'all together and said they've canceled spring championships and we're not really sure what's going to happen after that?
Right. So, I mean, towards the end of our season, which we didn't even know was the end, we kind of were finding out that the Ivy League started canceling and then the Patriot League, and we kind of started assuming that, you know, the ACC was next and the NCAA would probably follow. So we knew that it was probably going to happen, which is almost like the worst case scenario, because we went to practice one day and we kind of had a feeling that this was going to be our last practice, which is definitely the weirdest feeling ever, because you usually end your season on a game, not a practice. So when we went through the practice, Jenny told us she didn't have any new information for us, but later that day, we were all in the locker room, and Jenny kind of told us that, you know, the season, it was done. And it was, even though we knew it was coming, it was still such a heartbreaking moment for us, just because we knew we've worked so hard and we knew we had such high hopes for the rest of the season.
Katie, as a senior in particular, just how did you process that information? And then I would imagine you almost kind of went through a grief process the next couple of weeks of, you know, this may be ending, not just my college career, but, you know, my experience in Chapel Hill. Did you have those type of feelings?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was devastating. But for me, I kind of held on to the hope that there had to be some sort of, like, makeup and sort of an eligibility. I was holding on to that thinking, like, well, maybe I can come back next year. And I was just trying to remain hopeful throughout it all, to be honest. So I was sad that, you know, this team, it would never be the same again. And that was the truth, and I had to accept that. But I tried to remain hopeful that the NCAA would kind of honor this year and give us another chance, just because it was cut so short. And, I mean, after I found out, I was talking to my parents, and my dad was like, I really think they're going to give you an extra year. So I was holding on to that as, you know, hope for the future.
You have spoken very eloquently in various places about the importance of the scholarships that the Rams Club provides. The NCAA gives you that year back, but some schools didn't enable their spring sports seniors to come back for another year. How important was it that this was able to work out, that the Rams Club and that UNC were able to enable all spring sports seniors to come back?
I mean, it was just, I cried tears of joy, to be honest, because, I mean, when I found out that we were given another year of eligibility and, you know, it's a big decision, I was talking to my parents about it, and they were like, you know, whatever happens in terms of scholarships, like, we're going to find a way to make this work, because, I mean, this has been my dream since I had a lacrosse stick in my hand, which is probably about second grade now. And, I mean, you've put in all this time, all this energy, all this love for a sport, and to have it cut so short, it really is heartbreaking. And I knew that I wanted to come back and compete no matter what the circumstance was. But having the Rams Club, you know, come and support that fifth year, it was like the best news I could have come back to my parents. I mean, I'm the eldest of four, and next year we'll all be in college. And even though they said, like, we're going to make it work, it's such a relief to know that the Carolina family is so supportive and and it's supportive of their athletics and just our dreams in general. And it was just, it was one of the best pieces of news I've heard all year.
And now we find out that one specific member of the Carolina family, Roy Williams, was the one who called Bubba Cunningham the very day that spring sports were canceled and said that he and his wife, Wanda Williams, wanted to foot the bill for this. What do you think that says about him, and what does that mean to you?
I mean, I'm just so eternally grateful for his generosity, and it just, it speaks to, you know, not only the kind of coach he is, but the kind of man he is. He's not even a spring sport, and he's going and he's supporting all of the spring athletes' dreams that were, you know, cut short. And I mean, I just can't even describe how grateful I am for him and his family, and to know that he's so supportive of the other sports and just Carolina athletics in general. It just, it speaks to the Carolina family and just how tightly bonded everyone is. And I'm just so thankful for him.
Katie, can I ask? I want to ask you one more question just about the team in general. Why are you guys so good? You guys are up there. You know, you're competing for national championships every single year. What has allowed this program, really, and this is nothing new necessarily, but what has allowed this program to be one that is one of the very best so consistently across the nation?
I mean, when I committed here when I was in high school, I committed because I knew I would be playing against the best every single day. And I knew that would just make me better in return. But I think Jenny recruits athletes that are not only super competitive and we push each other every day in practice, but we have a lot of fun and we love lacrosse. And I think that passion is something that you can't really teach or you can't really instill into someone. That is like a natural thing. And I think every day we come to practice just knowing that we're so passionate about our sport, about each other, about our university, about everything, that we really put that into our competitive fire and really try to be the best that we can be.
Let's start where we always start, and that's us going, we don't know what's going to happen. I still think we're kind of in this holding pattern as far as athletics, although you continue to see rising numbers, unfortunately, when it comes to total numbers of coronavirus nationally and in the state. And you're starting to hear more and more people around college athletics, leaders, coaches, athletic directors, people like that, that are speaking out. Adam, I truly think that not playing football will be the absolute last resort. Playing football safely. Let me make sure I add that in there. Nobody's trying to compromise safety. But everybody understands the importance of playing. And so I do think that will be the last resort. I think the next to last resort would probably be moving it to spring. But I also think that, as we talked about in the last episode, leaders, at least in this conference and I'm sure in others, are just trying to figure out, is there a way to do this safely in a semi-normal way, and those decisions have not been reached yet. I think they will be reached soon. I can't imagine it's going to be more than another 10 days or so before at least the initial plan is laid out there. And I think that's just kind of where we are right now, still waiting to see what guidelines are going to be laid out there.
Mac Brown said this week that 6 weeks was the ideal lead time to whatever the first game might be, but that he felt like it could be done in 4. So that gives you a little bit of a frame of reference to how much wiggle room there is there. But of course you're dealing with all the other sports, and then you got some conferences that are starting to make decisions on their own. None of the Power 5 have really made far-reaching decisions yet. As you said, at some point you're going to have to, and I think the reason why football is so key is because it financially impacts every single one of the other ones, and it's just a domino effect. And so when I think there's been a little bit of unfair criticism of, well, you're just trying to play football because people like football. Colleges are trying to play football because it supports the entire process.
Well, I saw, and I'm not going to get this number exactly right, but I saw the potential economic impact, and I think it was just for the Big Ten schools. It's the graphic and information that I saw. And for Ohio State, it was more than $100 million that would be impacted if they didn't play. And everybody, I know everybody, oh, well, there's too much money, and you know, and that's a whole nother discussion. But to Adam's point, athletic departments, not just the people working there, but the players, the teams, the athletes, the people who are getting the opportunity to go to college and play sports, that impacts them too. And it's getting down to cutting time, Adam. It's getting tight. And I mean that was a bad choice of words. I meant it in like it's getting down to like it's got to happen here soon. A decision's got to be made. Well, I didn't mean cutting sports.
You meant something else.
Yes.
We like having Aaron Mattson and McKenna Jones in here with us. They might not, probably would not be here were it not for football and men's basketball.
Right.
We like Courtney Banghart and think she's going to do a great job. She would have a very different job to do if there is no football and men's basketball. And I think we're at the point of realization of 100% capacity at Keenan Stadium in a full season is not going to happen. So I don't think. So whatever you budgeted planning on that, it's going to be less than that. The question is not, is it going to be less? It's how much less. And that's the realities that athletic departments everywhere, not just Carolina, are dealing with.
I think also, Adam, and I know what I'm about to say is not going to be, you don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear this. I don't want to say this. Like, I hope this is a one-year problem. I hope this is a one-season problem. That it's a weird situation that everybody understands is weird, and there's going to be some really tough decisions and tough moves that have to be made, but hopefully it's a one-year deal, and then you get back to somewhat of normalcy. But I think at this point, it's hard to know. It's hard to know.
Well, and we've already seen examples of you think you make a sound plan as the university as a whole did. As we've talked about, this is really just one part of the entire university.
Exactly. Great point.
The university thought they had a really good plan for the fall. As recently as the last couple of weeks, Chancellor Guskowitz has said, we're not sure we're going to be able to do it exactly like that. So it's fine to make a big plan, but you need to be flexible and nimble enough to, in a month from now, look at your plan and go, you know what, this doesn't make sense anymore. And you're having to do it as part of an entire university. I mean, we're looking at 15,000 to 20,000 college student age people coming back here in a couple of weeks. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I will say this, just from a football perspective, I don't know if there's any, and I'm going to sound like this is such a Tar Heel Blue thing to say.
TarHeelBlue.com?
Man, I'm glad Mac Brown is Carolina's head coach. Mac Brown was like made to navigate through something like this. He had a press conference, a virtual press conference earlier this week, and he did it all right. He says the right things. He implements the right things. He gets information from the right people. He's just, what a terrific job I feel like he's done and is doing.
And I listened to him on something that we'll talk about later in this show earlier this week, and I was thinking about this exact thing. I wonder how much of that is the perspective of having done this for so long and realize, like, I think 55-year-old Mac Brown, 50-year-old Mac Brown, definitely 45-year-old Mac Brown handles this differently. Not just the job, yes, but also the whole thing that we're going through. And I think the thing that everyone criticized at first, oh, he's too old, has turned out to be a big benefit because he's got the perspective of not a 45-year-old who thinks that the counter run is the most important thing in the world. He's got a little more wisdom on him and can see a bigger picture. And I think you've really seen that over the last few weeks. I don't get the sense at all that he's given it like the well, I'm going to say the right thing in front of this, but then once I get in that meeting room, I'm going to tell these boys they better be studying their playbooks.
Right.
I think he's giving the same exact message to them that you hear from him on any press conference he's on. And I just think a lot of that is experience and just realizing what is important and what is not. Sometime, Jones, when you sit down with Mac Brown on the coach's show, which I bet you will, I would be interested to know how he looks at 50-year-old Mac Brown and what he would have done differently or what he knows now that he didn't know then.
All right, let me finish writing down this note about questions to ask Coach Brown.
And hopefully I'll win the question of the week.
I did think something he said earlier this week was interesting, which was basically he is trying to hammer home the point to his players and his staff of, if you're not comfortable doing this, that's okay. That your scholarship or your job isn't going to go away if you feel like this isn't something as a personal decision that you're not comfortable with right now. And like, take Javon DeWitt, for example. I mean, Javon DeWitt, we discussed this a couple months ago. You know, he battled cancer. And it is pretty clear, and I think even the CDC said this, that people who have weakened immune systems, including past cancer treatment, are people that are at a higher risk to get sicker with this virus. And I'm just using him as an example. I have no idea if this applies to him in any way. But if he came and said, Coach, you know what? I think it's best interest in me and my family if I wasn't around this, or if we could figure out a way for me to do this remotely or whatever. But Mac Brown talked about, and to your point, it feels sincerely of, you don't have to be tough and macho about this, which in male athletics and in football in particular is something that can happen, I think.
Walk it off.
Right. But it's okay if you feel that way, or if we need to figure something out. And I just think when you see all these players and these people who work with Coach Brown go, part of the reason I love playing for him, working with him, is I feel like he really cares for me other than just my position or my job or whatever. Of course, he demands excellence, but you understand what I'm saying. I think that's where you really see stuff like that.
Yes. And he would be that same thing whether he was a football coach or not. It just so happened that he is a football coach.
Also great to see Adam, Carolina basketball back and going through some workouts. We've just been teased a bit on social media. Saw a good shot of Coach Williams wearing his mask out there on the court with the guys. And great to see that they are back, and a lot of new faces, as we know will be the case this year. And good to see those guys back in action as well.
Well, and not to just keep hammering this home, but we've seen we see the basketball players more often than we see the football players because we're in proximity to them. They're not just like putting on their mask and saying, all right, take a picture and then we'll put that up on social media. They're doing it all the time.
Well, I saw Walker Kessler and Kerwin Walton, two of the freshmen for Carolina, were walking to the Smith Center yesterday. They were the only two people I could see out of our luxurious bay windows here in Pod World headquarters, and they both had a mask on. And it was just the only two people I could see on the horizon, Adam, and they both had their mask on.
And I think that just makes it feel a little silly, like all the discussion about, well, should I have to or should I not? Well, I mean, if Walker Kessler can do it, and I think you got to credit Garrison Brooks, because I was talking to Eric Hoots a few months ago, back before anyone ever considered bringing the players back. And he said, you know, the guy I've really got to talk to about this is Garrison, because everyone's going to do what he does. If he messes around or jokes about it or feels like it's not serious, that's what everybody's going to do because he's the senior and they'll fall in line with him. If he takes it seriously and makes it a big deal, they'll fall in line with that. And it's pretty evident that both Garrison and the coaches have all taken it very seriously. And it's not for show. It's a real thing that they're trying to be able to get back on the court. And this is a way they know how to do it.
Adam, anything else Tar Heel-wise before we get to our conversation with Harris Barton and then beyond?
No.
Okay. Quick reminders that we are brought to you by UNC Healthcare. Our friends at UNC Healthcare working hard, of course, and dedicating to caring for champions of all kinds. Help keep you in the game and at your very best. UNCHealthcare.org/sports. What a difficult time it must be to work in healthcare. Not just, and I think, not just from the coronavirus aspect, but I think I think people are more hesitant to go to the doctor right now or go to the hospital.
Yes.
And so I'm sure there are challenges both on the individual person level and then when eventually if someone does come, how to manage that. So thank you, UNC Healthcare, for all your hard work in trying to keep us safe. LS Tractor, of course, has the machine. And by the way, Adam, I am basically a yard warrior from this past week. Keep in mind, heat index at like 110.
Yep.
And I'm not trying to just say I toughed it out, but Adam, no big deal. Saturday, this past Saturday, pine straw down. We go pine straw backyard, mulch front yard. Mm. So we want people to think we're fancy, but then when it doesn't matter, we throw down the pine straw. pine straw in the back all day Saturday, mulch in the front all day Sunday. I probably sweated off 20 pounds over the weekend.
Yeah, I texted you Sunday to see if we were going to watch the game that we've selected to watch, and you said, I don't have time for that. I'm out on my LS tractor getting ready to spread some mulch.
Yeah. Let me say, so my friend let me borrow his truck to go get the mulch, and let me just give a quick tip of the cap to the gentleman at the home goods store that I visited. My man was running. He just had a pallet of the mulch lifted up. I'm sure it was an LS tractor, lifted it up, dropped it right on the back of the bed, the whole pallet, rock and roll. It was easy. It can be that easy for you, too, at lstractorusa.com. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? All right, our interview with Harris Barton, brought to you by the Atma Hotel Group, new owners of the Sheraton Chapel Hill and Courtyard by Marriott at Chapel Hill. I really think you're going to enjoy this. Harris Barton, multiple-time Super Bowl champion, All-Pro, All-America at Carolina, and now on the ballot for the College Football Hall of Fame, and he's had led a fascinating life after football as well. So let's get to our conversation with Harris Barton. Come back. Adam has a list and more after this on the Carolina Insider.
Man, we are excited today because our guest has been in the news here just recently. He's a nominee for the College Football Hall of Fame. That in itself is a great resume. But he's done quite a few other things. Harris Barton is a three-time Super Bowl winner. He's a two-time Pro Bowler. He's done about everything you can do in the game of football and has had a very successful life outside of football. So, Harris Barton, thanks so much for giving us some time today.
You got it. Hey, I love it, man. Go Tar Heels.
Catch Tar Heel fans up on what you've been doing since they last saw you on the football field.
Well, I was last on the football field at North Carolina. I forgot who we played. We probably played Duke last game of the year. I was drafted by the San Francisco 49ers in the first round in 1987. Came out to San Francisco, and first day in the huddle was Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Ronnie Lott was on defense, Roger Craig. Proceeded to play here for 12 years. Had a bunch of great years, won Super Bowls. Lost some NFC Championship games, won some NFC Championship games. It's all been good. and got married, retired out here, live in Palo Alto, California, basically right across the street from Stanford University, and have a small little asset management business going out here and four kids. How about that?
So you've been slightly busy since you left Chapel Hill is what you're telling us.
Yeah, slightly busy. Actually, you know, I have a daughter. My oldest daughter, Anna, is a lacrosse freshman for the University of North Carolina. And my son, Paul, who is a rising senior, is going to come to North Carolina in 2021 as a lacrosse player.
Wow. So
there you go. And then I got two other kids. So
send them our way when they're ready. Here we go. So, Harris, you spent your entire pro career with the 49ers. Not everybody stays with one team for their entire career, particularly when it's one that was a decade or a decade plus. Why was that such a great fit for you that it was somewhere that you wanted to stay for your entire career?
Well, I had a single offensive line coach. His name was Bob McKittrick, who what he liked with offensive linemen was he wanted smaller and quicker offensive linemen. That's what I was. I mean, again, even at 300, I was considered small in the National Football League, and it worked real well. And you know, the offense fit. You know, the West Coast offense was good for me. And shit, I was a decent player. You know, I mean, I did well against a bunch of great players on defense, and you know, they kept me around. I was a good guy, and I loved being out here, and I didn't want to go anywhere else.
You mentioned that first day of practice, all the big names who were on the practice field with you that day. To those of us who were watching the NFL, that the 49ers were the gold standard of football success, from front office to coach to players. What was it about that group that made them fit together so well?
Well, it really started with ownership, right? And Eddie DeBartolo was the owner of the team at that point in time. And he treated everybody like family. And that was different back then than it is now. When you say family, Mr. DeBartolo took care of you. You knew that if you know you were injured and played hurt, he was going to take care of you. As long as you were loyal to him, things were going to be great. And then the other thing was that they brought in character players. You know, it wasn't just any guy that could run the football or rush the passer. It was guys that could give back to the community. And Bill Walsh, who was the coach at the time who drafted me, really took that into consideration when he looked at players. He wanted good citizens. He wanted people that could get out there and play hard and knew how to turn it off, and would be great in the schools and in the charities and doing all that type of stuff. And that was right. That's why we had so many great players. And then the last thing was, the best players on the team worked the hardest. So if you're a third round receiver coming from a small college, and you come into the 49ers and you see Jerry Rice out there, who's been in the league for 15 years, running as hard as he can, lifting weights after practice, watching more film, you realize that, hey, if I'm going to be the best, I'm going to make this team, I got to work harder than him. So the best players worked the hardest, and that was the work mentality, and we all wanted to win, and we did.
You mentioned some names of guys who I think are considered either the best or in the conversation for the best at the position that they played, and Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Ronnie Lott in particular, those three. What did you notice about them? And you may answer this a little bit right then, but what did you notice about them that separated them from other excellent players? Because if you're in the NFL, you're excellent. What separated them to take that final step to be one of the greatest that ever did it at their particular spots?
They wanted to be the greatest. They worked at it hard. That was their they worked hard. They demanded a higher level of intensity than other players. I mean, what it is it's the Michael Jordan factor, right? I mean, we all know Michael Jordan, and we all watched The Last Dance. I'm watching The Last Dance thinking, man, that could be Joe Montana. That could be Ronnie Lott. That could be Jerry Rice. I mean, same mentality. Hey, we got to win. If we don't win, it's a failure. And that's how they played the game. That's how they practiced the game. And that's why the team was so successful.
I know you've told this story many times before, but can you take us through the drive to beat the Bengals in the Super Bowl and what happened in the huddle and how that whole thing unfolded?
Yeah. It was kind of crazy. I mean, we were heavily favored against the Bengals, and all of a sudden, with 2 minutes and 23 seconds to go in the game, we find ourselves, down by 3 points. So we received the kickoff. The Bengals made a punt, not a punt. They kicked off, and the guy that caught the ball in the end zone was 7 yards deep, and he decided to run it out. And he got tackled on the 7-yard line. And I'm furious about it, right? He could have taken a knee and got us the ball to 20 and not taken any time off the clock, blah, blah, blah. So I'm in the huddle, and it's a long TV timeout, and I'm yelling and screaming, gosh dang it, what is he doing? What's Spencer doing? Why did he do that? Man, this is ridiculous. We should be killing these guys. And Montana comes into the huddle, and he looks around, and he sees I'm being a distraction to everybody else. And he goes, hey, H. I go, what? And he goes, look down there in the other end zone. So I turn around, look down the other end zone, and he goes, there's John Candy. And sure enough, John Candy's down there eating popcorn, talking to people. And I'm like, yeah, that is John Candy. And then Roger Craig looks over there and says, yeah, that is John Candy. And Jerry Rice, yeah, hey, John Candy, right? So so then, the referee calls the blows the whistle, and we go out on the field, and there we are, 2 minutes and 17 seconds later, we're in the end zone, and we win the game. So, I mean, it was just a classic Joe Montana, right? Just, focus. I was totally being a total distraction, and he just calmed, calmed everybody down, and off we went.
Is that the word they used to describe you, a distraction?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. That's the podcast way to describe it, right?
So, three Super Bowl wins, as you mentioned. I mean, that those teams were constantly in the mix for conference championships, world titles. At some point, does it become, I don't know, a burden? Have you won so much that you're just trying to win more? Does it get hard? Is it hard to keep that level of fire to achieve that level of success?
No, it's not hard to keep that fire. I mean, especially when you got good teams. You know, I mean, it's such a kick in the pants to win one. And as soon as you do, the first thing you think about as you start taking your pads off is like, man, we got to do this again. And it's like a drug. I mean, it gets in your system, and it's you know, and you know guys that make the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl get paid better. They, you know, they're loved in their communities. I mean, it's a big time stamp of approval for an NFL player to win the Super Bowl. And you do it once, you want to do it 10 times. You want to be like Tom Brady. You want to play till you're 42, and you know, you want to keep winning those things because it is so much fun to win a Super Bowl. And the worst thing is losing a Super Bowl, right, or losing an NFC Championship game, because you realize you're one step away from being a Super Bowl champion, and that's a hardship. And so that's, you know, players, it's the dream. It's the dream of an NFL player.
Jones has a very good theory that the worst game to lose in the college basketball season is the regional final, because you don't get to experience the Final Four. Is in football, is the NFC Championship game that equivalent, is that worse to lose than the Super Bowl?
That's the worst thing to lose, you know, because you realize, you know, you go home and you turn on TV and you're not going to the Super Bowl. And I can't tell you, you know, I mean, nobody remembers who was in the NFC Championship game. They only remember who was in the Super Bowl, right? And usually nobody ever remembers who lost the Super Bowl, except if it's you. And so, you know, you got to. If you get to the NFC Championship game, you got to get through it.
What was your welcome to the NFL moment?
Jeez. Wow. You know, Bill Walsh was a stickler for no, you know, nobody had any hazing. So my first training camp really was kind of my welcome to the NFL was we used to practice up in Rockland, and we had Rockland, California, at a small junior college called Sierra College, and there were a bunch of metal lockers in there, and the rookies got in early for training camp, called August 1st, and I'm sitting there, and they got all the draft choices, you know, one by one, and the on purpose, the guy next to me was Ronnie Lott, okay, because Ronnie Lott wanted to get to know the first round pick. He wanted to be dressed next to the guy, he wanted to get to know him, And so that was when I showed up, and there's my metal locker right next to Ronnie Lott's. I mean, that's like, oh, my God, this is Ronnie Lott. You know, this is the guy who cut his finger off. This is the guy that, you know, kills people. He wants to dress next to me. So that was my welcome to the NFL. Then you kind of go out on the field, and you know, the speed is just everybody's fast. Everybody's good. Everybody's great. And so, you know, if you're going to keep up in the league for a long time, you got to work your butt off. And yeah, you know, the welcome to the NFL it was like that every day for me.
All right, I want to change gears a little bit. You're in high school. It's time to decide where you want to go to school. You're being recruited by just about everybody in the country. Why was Carolina your choice back when you made that decision?
Well, you know, I took a visit there. I'll never forget. Mel Foles was the guy who recruited me, and Dick Crum was the coach, and they all came by the house, as did Bear Bryant and Bruce Earl from Ohio State, and you know, Coach Crum and Mel Foles came in, and you know, met with my mom and dad, and Bobby Bowden recruited me as well from Florida State. But you know, Coach Crum made the point that hey, Carolina is a great school, and you're coming here to get an education. And then when I started looking around, you know, I realized that if I was trying to get into North Carolina, being an out-of-state student, it was very difficult. And so my final decision came down to, hey, I'm going to go to Carolina. I'm going to play football because that's the only way I can get into school there. And then after I get my education, I'm going to move back to Atlanta and work for Pepsi or Coke or IBM or who, you know, Georgia Pacific, because you know the value of a North Carolina degree in Atlanta is really remarkable. So that's why I chose the University of North Carolina. They felt like they were a pretty good football program. They weren't the best in the country, but they were the best school for an out-of-state student like myself to have the combination of really becoming a student and an athlete.
So you get to campus here in Chapel Hill, and you're shortly following the Lawrence Taylor era when there were some incredible stories about him off the field. You're not having to deal with social media. What was life like as a college football player in Chapel Hill when you were here?
Well, I first walked into there, and my first roommate was a guy by the name of Legally Armas. And Legally Armas was a great kicker for the Tar Heels for many years. And we were in room 228 Teague, okay? 228 Teague, I think it's a co-ed dorm now, but back then it was all male. And Lee
what
and
dorm
I,
was this?
Teague.
Teague. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Lee and I were college roommates for 4 years. He became my best friend. You know, he's the godfather of my kids. He still lives in Wilson, North Carolina. His dad used to run Dick's Hot Dog Stands. But, you know, that was my interest, you know, to North Carolina. I mean, we were scared freshmen. I mean, Dave Drexel was the an offensive line player. Brian Blados was there as well. Rod Elkins was on his way, you know, his last year as a quarterback. We were both redshirted. Scott Skins-Cavage, Kevin Anthony. I mean, it was such a great entrance. I mean, and the team was a good team, and William Fuller was the playing defense, and it was just a fun time to be a Carolina Tar Heel, and I had a remarkable college experience.
Adam mentioned this leading in, but nominated now for the College Football Hall of Fame. How does that process? Do you go get a phone call when somebody goes, "Hey, we're nominating you"? How does that process work when you find out that this is a possibility?
Well, I'll be honest with you. You know, there's friends of mine that said, "Hey, you should." You know, Ronnie Lott had said, "Listen, you've got to try and do this." You know, I mean, and I don't know how to do it, right? So I don't know what the steps are. You know, you don't investigate it to try and put yourself up. Well, when Mac Brown got there, I called Mac Brown and said, "Hey, what can I do to help? You know, I'm here. I'm in California." He said, "Hey, listen, we're going to get you in the College Football Hall of Fame. We're at least going to get you on the nominating spot." So it was Mac Brown that picked up the phone, started calling around, started making it work. Him and Bubba Cunningham, you know, and actually Gary Burns, who's also in the athletic department office, were the key guys to kind of getting it done. Then they picked up the phone and called Ronnie Lott. Ronnie Lott wrote a letter to the College Football Hall of Fame, and sure enough, you know, last month I was announced being on the nominated, being put on the nomination list for the College Football Hall of Fame.
All right, this may sound like a sappy question, but I have to imagine that makes you feel pretty good that there are these people. I mean, you're not out there championing yourself, that there's other people that are sitting there going, "This dude should be in. Why isn't he in?" How did that make you feel?
It is pretty amazing. I mean, you know, I didn't play for Mac, you know, and to have Mac, you know, have my back like that is unbelievable. You know, I'm real friendly with a bunch of people that I've met through golf out here that have been real helpful. It's a cool experience. You know, there's been so many college football players, and to be in that top 0.1% that gets on the nominating list, and then alongside Julius Peppers too, right? I mean, I used to cheer for Julius Peppers, right? So, I mean, that's the coolest thing ever, right? I mean, I can't imagine, you know, what could be better than that?
You've got four kids. How much credibility did that give you with the kids that, "Oh, well, maybe we should listen to him. He's nominated for the Hall of Fame."
Yeah, they don't listen. I don't have any pictures of playing football up in my house. I mean, I was inducted into the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame a couple of years ago, and I think that kind of woke them up a little bit. But, you know, for the most part, you know, somebody once told me, "Hey, you know, the kids don't want to hear your stories. They want you to listen to their stories." And that's kind of the way I try and parent the kids. I mean, I'm not out there telling them how to pass block or telling them how to, you know, throw a lacrosse ball. You know, there's great coaches out there that'll teach them how to do that. I just wanted them to have desire, and I want them to try and be the best.
You mentioned a couple of children and lacrosse. How has lacrosse become such a big part of your family story?
you know, out here, you know, lacrosse was when I got out. When I got to Carolina, I loved lacrosse. I mean, Willie Scroggs was a coach, and guys like Robbie Russell and Taylor Klassen and Joey Seibold were my classmates. My good buddy Pat Sheehan had played lacrosse at Lawrenceville, and he kind of came to Carolina. He was an offensive lineman next to me. He had a big love for it. And so when I got married and I you know, had a daughter, I told my wife, I said, hey, let's get her going on lacrosse. We had to look far and wide out here, you know, back in 2001 to try and find a lacrosse place that my daughter could play for. Well, now it's the fastest growing sport out here, right? I mean, it is dwarfing football. It's killing women's soccer. You know, it's definitely hurt, you know, women's softball. But, all the kids are playing it. And, you know, my kids didn't play Pop Warner football, and they wanted to do something. So in the fall, they played soccer, and in the spring, they played lacrosse. And they became good at it, and they got on club teams and traveled, you know, back to the East Coast, and college coaches noticed them. And, you know, it didn't hurt that I went to Carolina, and Carolina's got the two best lacrosse programs in the country, men's and women's, great coaches. And so they fell in love with the sport and decided to go for it.
How'd you get into the financial side of things after football?
You know, the 49ers practice facility when I was out here, sat in the middle of Silicon Valley, and from the, you know, when we would practice on the field, you could basically stand there and watch them build the campuses of Intel and Yahoo and Cisco and Sun Microsystems. And the 49ers at that point in time were up, you know, up and to the right, but so was the Silicon Valley. I mean, these young engineers were coming out here and changing technology and doing things, and you started to meet these guys. And so I remember one year, and I remember it was like 1992, I went upstairs to the 49ers, and I stole stationery that had, you know, 49ers, 5 Super Bowl championship, you know, logo on the stationery. And I wrote, you know, some of these companies a letter and said, hey, listen, I'm Harris Barton. I practice here with the 49ers. My off day is Tuesday. I'd love to come in and meet you. And when they got the letter, they were like, oh, here's a young kid that, you know, really wants to advance himself. Yeah, yeah, sure. Come on in. So I'd go into these Sun Microsystems and Cisco Systems, and I'd say, hey, you know, I'd do a little bit of research about the company and bring my Super Bowl rings in and take pictures with the CEO. And at the end of it, I'd say, listen, let me buy you lunch, and hey, let's stay friends, and if you got a charity event you want me to do, I'd love to do that. And, you know, so then when my career ended, you know, I went back to those same 5 guys and said, hey, my career's over. What should I do? And they said, well, you know what? You should get yourself into venture capital, because this is the, you know, you're a good citizen, you're a smart kid, you played great, we're big fans, you're a good family man. Hey, get yourself into venture capital. And that's how I did it. That's why this area has been so great to me out here in Palo Alto.
How did you realize that's something that once you got started that you thought, you know what, I'm pretty good at this. Like, I understand this. I understand what works. That to me just seems like it would be a very complicated field to enter. When did you realize that it was something that you were comfortable and pretty good at?
Well, it's just luck, really. I mean, if I get drafted by the Cleveland Browns, this doesn't happen. If I, you know, even if I'm in Charlotte, it doesn't happen. You know, it just happened that it happened to be out here during the height of the kind of the internet, you know, bubble or whatever you want to call it. That, and I got lucky. I associated myself with good people, smart people. And they were helpful. And you know, it's really difficult for most NFL players that play 12 years to kind of get themselves back in the business world, right? Because number one, they're making such large amounts of money playing football that now they've got to go start a new job at a new role, and they've got no experience in being a sales guy or writing code or you know even doing anything in the business world. So it's hard for these guys. I was just lucky. I just got lucky, and I realized, you know, who I needed to follow. And like Ronnie Lott told me, hey, you know what? You got to know how to be a rookie again. That's what you got to do. You know, you got to fly the red eye into New York. You got to pour coffee for the CEO. I mean, you got to be a rookie all over again. And most guys can't do that. And so I was lucky enough that I was in an area and was humble enough and had done enough, you know, due diligence on how to you know, on what to do, that it just worked out. Now, it hasn't all been rosy. I mean, you know, I worked 8 years in the partnership. I had to, you know, had to sell it and had to start all over again. But, you know, the gist of it is that, you know, you're here in this area, you're a good citizen, you give to the community, people are going to give back.
Has it reached the point where you're Harris Barton financial guy and people are surprised that, oh, you played for the 49ers?
Yeah, I'm trying hard. You know, trying hard for it to be that way. It's definitely hard to lead with the 49ers. You know, I mean, you can lead with the 49ers in the NFL career, but, man, if you don't have anything to back it up after the first meeting, then you won't go very far. So I try and really downplay the 49ers, especially to my kids and to other people, and I really want to be looked at as a business guy. I want to be a family man. You know, all the things that, you know, don't really associate with football, but, you know, and that's a struggle every day, you know, to try and be taken seriously.
You've mentioned the community and being a good citizen. Yeah, you've had that phrase or something similar a couple of times. What are some important things to you, some things that you've latched on to that you've tried to help out with that are important to you outside of your business or outside of football?
Well, years ago, I mean, both my parents passed away when I was young. My dad died at 56, and my mom died at 61. And they both died of brain cancer. And so when my mom died, my dad died first, and then when my mother died, Ronnie Lott, who was my business partner at the time, came to me and said, listen, man, we got to do something. We got to raise some money. We got to stop this. So Ronnie and I put our heads together, and we came up with, hey, listen, there's no every charity event that you do, golf tournament, walk-a-thon, bike-a-thon, paddle raising, black tie dinner, you can't bring a five-year-old to. You can't bring him. And so let's put together an event. My parents love Broadway. He goes, let's put together an event that buys tickets to Broadway shows, you know, in San Francisco and New York and other places, and we bring kids to the theater, get kids to the theater, so parents can take their five-year-old to a charity event. So I thought that was brilliant. So we went out, and Ronnie and I, you know, went to a couple of sponsors and raised some money and went out and bought tickets to see The Lion King here in San Francisco. And it was massively successful. And people would bring their kids, and they'd have a cocktail party, and we raised money, and we'd give the money to brain tumor causes. And it worked out great. Now we've done that for 15 years. We've done shows from Lion King, Wicked. We've done five times Hamilton. We've done, you know, Beauty and the Beast. We've done, you know, Mary Poppins. And it's become a massive event. And lo and behold, we've raised about $25 million over the last 15 years for these type of causes. So it's called Champion Charities. .org, you know, look it up. We do work all over the place, so that's very fulfilling.
From the far, far outside, it has always seemed like those 49ers teams have remained so close. And you've mentioned Ronnie Lott a couple times, and when Dwight Clark passed away, there are a couple stories about how a bunch of 49ers got together. Is that actually the case? And if so, what is it that's held y'all together now for quite a few years after you played together?
Yeah, no, it's the camaraderie. I mean, day one, you walk into the locker room and there's Ronnie Lott sitting next to you, right? I mean, those are things you can't forget. And Guy McIntyre, who went to Georgia, and Steve Wallace, who lives in Atlanta now, went to Auburn. I mean, those are my buddies. And when you go to war with those guys and you win a Super Bowl, man, there's a bond. And then when you're finished playing the game, and guys like Ronnie reach out to you, guys like Joe reach out to you, and they want to continue to help you out. I mean, it's just a great group of guys that stay in touch. And again, I don't think that happens on a team that's 1-15, but it does happen on teams that win Super Bowls. You become so close with these guys, and you recognize that you've done something together as a group that you can never match in the rest of your business life, and that type of bond really kind of never goes away. So I'm so excited when I see John Taylor. I'm psyched when I see Jesse Sapolo. I'm really excited when I see Montana, Ronnie Lott, Steve Bono. I mean, it just goes, those are all my best friends. as good of friends as my friends of college.
So what would you say to the current era of Carolina football players who are sort of beginning that journey now? What would you say to them about how to appreciate the opportunity they have and how they can maybe recreate something close to what you've been able to experience?
Yeah, I would tell any young freshman coming in, you got to exhaust the opportunity. I mean, that school is made for a great combination student-athlete, right? I mean, the facilities they have now, the coaching they have now, the new stadium turf, the attitude that they have. I mean, that and what they did last year was so dang exciting. I mean, I'm so excited for what Mac Brown has done and what the coaching staff there has done. And then you look at the other side, the academics there, it's still such a world-renowned institution. I mean, it is impossible to get into from an out-of-state student or as a, an in-state student even. You know, it's impossible to get into. And if you're there and you're not exhausting the opportunity, then you're wasting it. And you got to exhaust the opportunity.
Harris, last thing at least from me. You mentioned not playing for Coach Brown, but I also feel like you probably know Coach a little bit at this point. What makes him different? Why has he been able to become one of the most successful college football coaches of our time? What in your opinion has separated him from others?
Well, he cares. He cares. And I this is not even a story that he told me. But so when my son's being recruited for lacrosse, we go to meet with Joe Bresci, right? And Joe Bresci, I know Joe because Joe played when I was at North Carolina, and he's a head lacrosse coach. He says, "I go, have you gotten in touch with Mac Brown? I mean, do you know Mac at all?" And he goes, "Do I know Mac? I called him the other day. We're trying to recruit this kid from Boston College, right?" And I call Mac Brown, and Mac Brown says, "Hey, bring him by the office, right? Bring him by the office." So the kid, this lacrosse player, walks into Mac Brown's office with Joe Bresci, and Mac Brown, for an hour and a half, talks to the kid. "Hey, you got to join here. It's about the lifetime. It's a lifetime of friends. It's a great place to play. Lacrosse is great, blah, blah, blah." Not even talking about football. And sure enough, that kid, ends up committing to North Carolina. So that's the type of thing he does for the institution. I mean, he does the same thing for some of the professors. I mean, he's the lifeblood of the organization, and his spirit is just infectious. And when you get around him, I mean, it's a cool thing. I can see why he was so successful at Texas and at North Carolina. It's so exciting to have him back. I mean, it's putting Carolina football back on the map. It really is.
Appreciate Harris Barton's time, and I don't know if Harris Barton is in the GAA, the General Alumni Association.
I bet he is.
I just feel like he is.
Yep.
And he celebrates that feeling every day of the pride that you feel when you're a Tar Heel. The GAA serves Carolina's more than 336,000 living alumni, 66,000 GAA members. You are a student for just a handful of years, but you are an alumni forever. Alumni.unc. .edu. Adam, if you're new to the podcast, Adam makes this list of things that he likes to talk about. We do it after the guest interview. That's what we're going to do now. Adam's list.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Thanks for catching everybody up. I bet they're wondering, though, why that song played.
And so then there's sometimes we have to justify things. Sometimes we don't even want this. Some people are so classy. What a bonanza. El Paso rocks.
CarolinaPodFans.com could catch you up on some of those things.
Yeah. Oh, I've got to talk about that here in just a little bit.
Okay.
But Adam, your list first.
Okay. First on the list, Daniel Bard. We covered him and did many of his games when he was a Tar Heel, which honestly seems like a bit of a long time ago. Out of the big leagues for 7 years, back in the big leagues right now with the Colorado Rockies. Great story.
I saw a terrific headline about the Daniel Bard story, and I can't remember what publication it's from. It may have been Sports Illustrated, whatever that is now. And it said,
7 years ago, Daniel Bard Googled how to get rid of the yips, and now he's back in the bigs.
That was SI.
Was it? Yep. I mean, that's just wild.
Well, and
Daniel Bard's always had the stuff.
Yes.
He's got the Nuke Lelouch stuff.
Good callback. I think it shows you how much of baseball is mental. Because he's not in his prime physical years, I think it's fair to say.
Nor- unlike us.
Yeah, unlike us who are trained specimens. But because he was able to figure out the mental part and spend some time actually working as a mental skills coach in the big leagues, which helped him, he's been able to figure out a way to get back on that mound and contribute to a major league team at the highest possible level. I mean, you think about when we've had Alex White and Zach Gallen in here and how hard they've talked about that it is to play at that level. He didn't play at any level.
Yeah.
And then able to get back out on the mound and produce is unbelievable. And all because of the mental side.
We're going to get you on this podcast, Daniel Bard.
Oh, yes, we are.
We've had Andrew Miller.
Yep.
We've had Robert Woodard. We're going to get that whole 06 rotation on this podcast one day.
I'd like to have them all together.
Yeah.
Well, that probably won't happen next week.
Make it happen, Adam. That should be easy.
Yeah. We got a fun email from Michael Gaskins, who says that he and his kids updated their UNC Monopoly board. I thought this was impressive. So now the Carolina Insider podcast has a square on the board.
We are part of the real estate with the pit.
Yes.
And we cost $70.
Yeah. I was a little concerned that
Adam makes about that per year on the Carolina Insider.
Yeah, that's right. That's how they picked the number. I'm a little concerned that we're the cheapest real estate on the board, but I fully understand that most of these you couldn't take off. So like we couldn't be Boardwalk, for example. You couldn't take off South Building to put the Carolina Insider podcast on there. But thanks very much, Michael Gaskins and kids. What's your feelings on Monopoly, Jones?
I like Monopoly. I haven't played it in a long time though. I think I would be super rusty if I had to play right now. I'd be super rusty.
Well, it's very much contingent on how serious are the people you're playing with.
Right.
Like if they're the type who are out for blood, it can turn into a marathon. And if you're just kind of having fun rolling, then
can I give you a card game suggestion?
Sure.
Play Nine. Play Nine.
What is that?
Okay, I'll try to be fast.
Okay.
So it is a golf theme, but you don't have to know anything about golf to play.
Well, luckily I do.
You get 8 cards. You stack them 4 and 4. So a row of 4, a row of 4. All. So you got 4 columns with a card on top of each other. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And then you start turning over the cards on your turn. All the cards are within 0 and 12 points, each card that you turn over. And you can get their 4 minus 5s, which are hole-in-ones. I promise this makes...
This is the quick version, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you want a lower score because obviously
right.
It's golf.
Right.
So you flip all the cards over, and the person with the lowest score at the end wins. But there's obviously a discard pile, and you can pick cards. You can, and so what you're trying to do... is like, let's say, for example, I have a 5 and then I have a 5 below it. Well, that cancels out and it's a 0. But so it's just a fun, there's different strategies to it. You're trying to get low. It's easy to understand after about one play. You know what I mean? After about one time through, you understand it. Kids can play. Adults can play. Play 9.
We've been playing a lot of Uno at our house. There's all kinds of different Uno games now.
I do not like the type of Uno where, like, if you're, I may have said this before, where you're drawing, you have to draw a card that you can play.
Yep.
It does take forever. It's like, I don't like Uno so much that I want to play it for, you know, an hour and a half.
Right.
Can I give you another one? Rummy Cube. Rummy Cube.
I always called it Rummy Cube.
It might be Rummy Cube. Wrong? I don't know.
I haven't played that in a while, but I remember.
I like Rummy Cube.
I don't fully, I just remember I played that a lot back in the day.
Yeah.
Back on the street corner.
So, there's our board game corner.
Yeah. Wow, that's very informative. Jeremy Wolberg sent us a very good article about Lil Baby. I read it, the whole thing, of course. Jeremy said this quote from the article caught his eye. It was Coach K who noticed something in a 17-year-old little baby. Just in case you see that used wrong, not the Coach K you're thinking of. There's a guy on the Atlanta rap scene who goes by Coach K.
Mm.
So don't get it twisted, Jones.
I won't.
Okay, good. Thank you to John Parker for his very nice email. Okay, I've been reading a lot of presidential stuff lately. I don't know why. Maybe it's because the election's coming.
Adam's making a run.
Yeah, that's right. And so Mac Brown recently tweeted that he was on the podcast of the George W. Bush and Barbara Bush Foundation. Now, before you start rolling your eyes and thinking this is some political thing, it's not.
Adam, why are you getting political?
So George Bush's George H.W. Bush. Sorry, I said George W. It's George H.W. Bush and Barbara Bush Foundation. George H.W.'s grandson hosts the podcast.
Okay.
And had Mac Brown on. And some of the stuff was what we've heard him talk about before, about how do you handle your team in a pandemic and all that stuff. You know, the basic things that we deal with all the time in sports.
Normal chatter points.
Right. But he also told some, Coach Brown told some great stories about interacting with George H.W. Bush and with George W. Bush, who was the governor of Texas when Coach Brown was at Texas, and how Coach Brown started the charity event that he does in Austin that's raised now over, I think, $13 million.
Crazy, yeah.
With Matthew McConaughey and Jack Ingram. And so that podcast is well worth a listen. And you don't have to have any strong feelings either way about George H.W. Bush to listen and appreciate everybody involved, really. So give it a shot. Okay, now let's get to what's important, and that's game shows. Mary Morgan Bittler Kaiser.
Just a reminder, UNC undergrad 2014, dental school grad 18, orthodontics 21. She has made a career of schooling at Carolina and says she is a proud student for one more precious year.
She sent us...
This is an electric email.
It really is. Mary says, this is all her writing, of course. I listened to Jones's Vacation from Life and was immediately transported into a...
She's talking about the sweep, Adam.
Yeah. Immediately transported into a vacation of my own. My twin brother Glenn and I grew up as loyal and devoted fans of many game shows, but especially Bob Barker era The Price is Right, which, side note, that's the real Price is Right.
Yeah.
And Supermarket Sweep.
Oh, Drew Carey doesn't do a bad job. He's not Bob Barker.
It's not the same. I have vivid and fond memories of going to the local grocery store with my mom. Mm. She would detour down an aisle to grab just one needed item and leave the cart near the deli section, where my brother and I...
Big money there.
...would proceed to place as many turkeys and hams into the cart as fast as we could. Note, there was no 5-item limit in our particular version of the game. While we always dreamed that we would one day be Supermarket Sweep champions, we also have an ongoing dream of following in our parents' footsteps by participating in the family feud.
Whoa.
Yes, indeed. My very own parents were participants on a 1984 episode of Family Feud with host Richard Dawson.
Unbelievable.
My grandmother, mother's mother, secretly signed up her family to participate in the Raleigh audition for the Family Feud. That's good work by the grandmother.
Yeah, the feud.
My grandmother then revealed the news of their pending tryout to her chosen team members, consisting of my grandmother, my mom's sister, my mom's brother, and my dad. Do you know who you would pick for your team if you had to pick? You probably shouldn't say it on the air if you know.
Yes, I know who I would pick.
Yeah, I think I probably do too. As luck would have it, and everyone listening who's part of our family can now just assume it was them we were thinking of.
Are you talking about our pod family, Adam?
Yeah. As luck would have it, they were selected at the audition and chosen to be flown out to California, Jones, to record the show at the Family Feud's expense, no less.
And at the airport, they saw a young Michael Jordan. Oh, wait, no, that was another.
The team member dynamic meant my dad was the only non-blood relative on the team.
A lot of pressure there.
Ooh, this is a tricky one. Interestingly, My mother's maiden name was Lowendick. My father's last name is Bittler. For some reason, the family feud decided they would rather go with Bittler than Lowendick. Don't know why, even though there was only one true Bittler on the team. My dad was also the chosen spokesman for the team. Ooh, lot of pressure. That means you stand right up at the front.
Yeah.
He always, now, you know who does a good job with the game show reboot? Steve Harvey. I like him on the new Family Feud. He does a really good job. Good work, Steve. He always says, having only been married to my mom for 2 years, he was worried his time with the family would be cut short if he misrepresented or let them down in his performance.
Understood.
As it turns out, the Bittler family won on the last question of the Fast Money round and came home with the $10,000 prize money to be split between the family. Note, my dad did not opt to participate in Fast Money because he was positive he would be excommunicated from the family for slow and or embarrassing responses.
And not a single member of the Lowendick family has had to work a day since.
This email was written from a yacht. Needless to say, watching the Bittler Family Feud episode is part of our Thanksgiving tradition each year.
That part I like. It's like, all right, everybody, let's gather around, watch the feud.
And we always pick up on a new fun aspect of the rewatch, whether it be my dad's awkward manner of celebrating their victory as he cluelessly jumps around the stage or enjoying the quintessential 1980s commercials for Folgers Coffee. As Adam mentioned, I agree we are in some sort of game show renaissance. I hope the game shows of today can return to the style and quality of some of the classics, like Supermarket Sweep. I know my twin brother and I would be just as thrilled as adults to participate in something as highly revered as a Supermarket Sweep or Price is Right. Now, let's talk about the sweep, because we also got a message from via the Instagram. As you know, that's something that we know a lot about. From Catherine, who says, sharing this news about the sweep on the pod today may be the single most significant thing y'all have done on the pod ever. This was my all-time favorite show as a kid, and I've been hoping for a remake for years so I could be on it. Forget the hams. I'm going for the Bertolli olive oil.
Yep, big money item.
Thanks for sharing. So since Jones brought this up last week, I have watched 10 episodes of Supermarket Sweep.
Sure, yeah.
And I've required my entire family to watch with me.
Required viewing.
Some of them love it. Some of them pretend not to love it, but I know in their hearts they do.
Of course they do.
I have a few questions about the game that I wanted to ask you.
Okay.
Do you think they get to walk the market beforehand?
No, because there's plenty of times on the mini sweeps where people kind of run around lost and peering down all the aisles. I mean, everybody knows where the hams are. And everybody knows.
That's really true in life and in Supermarket Sweep.
And everybody knows where the diapers are for the most part. But I think you just have to rely on the consistency of supermarkets when you're going through the sweep.
Okay.
How big do you think it is, the supermarket?
I don't think it's as big as we think.
No. There's a lot of bumping into each other.
It's not as big as your average supermarket today.
No.
We've talked about this off the air. Do they know they're about to be called?
I really struggle with this. I think they do, because they're not so surprised and excited when their name or when their product is called. Like, if they didn't know they were coming on, I think they'd go a little crazier. It's a very subdued celebration, as if they're just going through the motions.
Yeah. Some of their motions are restricted by the fashions that they're wearing.
Well, yeah. Those big, bulky sweaters can slow you down.
Yeah.
The vests can.
And the shirt's made to look like vests.
Yeah. It's hard to raise your arms all the way up with a vest.
Still, my favorite is the guy who had on the green patterned shirt with his emerald green pants.
Yep.
With multiple pleats.
Yeah.
But there's nobody who dresses like David Ruprecht.
And I think the people who are holding items that don't get called.
Yeah.
They seem to know what their fate is.
Well, and what do you just sit there throughout the next 22 minutes holding your Eggos in your lap?
Got my Crest toothpaste here.
Or do you just kind of casually reach down, put it back under your seat, and wait for Johnny Gilbert to call the next set of names? Speaking of Johnny Gilbert, so he records all this after the fact.
Has to do it after the fact.
Right?
Of course he does, yeah.
Okay. So, but someone's writing that for him.
I feel like someone writes it for him and then he just reads it while watching the video. That is what I feel happens.
Are the sweatshirts customized?
No, I think they've bought a bunch of, because they're all too big. So when you get to sweep time, they make the teams wear these sweatshirts where team one wears red, team two wears blue, and team three wears yellow. As far as the order they came in the first 20 minutes of the show, of course. For two questions about this. One, why does the person not running through the running in the sweep have to wear a sweatshirt?
Yeah.
And number two,
it's so you know where to bring the ham.
I guess. Answering my own question, I think they just order a bunch of extra large sweatshirts because they hang off some smaller people, and it's like there's no size consideration given.
My son was completely mystified by the fact that they have the collars coming out from under them, and he wanted to know if they actually had to wear, for example, a polo shirt or something under the sweatshirts. And then my wife explained that the sweatshirt was probably built that way with the faux collars.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Oh, that's what she thinks.
I don't think that's true. Like, I disagree.
You think they're wearing a white polo shirt under
I think
their
they
sweatshirt?
Get a white polo shirt and then the sweatshirt so that everybody has the collar popping. Yeah, I don't agree with that.
Oh, she thinks the sweatshirts are built that way.
No. Have you ever seen a sweatshirt that has a collar popping out of it?
Yes. They had those in the 90s.
I don't think that's true.
They had those in the 90s. It was stylish. But you don't want to have too much heat when you're running about the aisles.
You don't want to overheat.
Looking for the bonus. Okay, why is there so much drama at the end when David Ruprecht tells them their total?
Yeah.
If they've won the $5,000, your total is what you had plus $5,000.
Yes. Your grand total today, and it's always going to be between like $5,800 and $6,300.
But they always act completely blown away. Oh, $5,912. I can't believe it. Yeah, you got $912 in the regular round, and then we're giving you $5,000.
Can I give you a spoiler for one that I don't know if it's on the Netflix, but I've seen it online?
Huh.
So the team that comes in third place feels as though their strategy is to go get all the extra items to try to build up all the bonus money.
Right.
But they fail to do any of it, and their sweep total is $7. I have never actually seen that one. I just saw it online. Well, I think like a YouTube suggestion popped up some supermarket sweep for me because I've been looking at it.
Well, that's the polar opposite of some of the contestants I've seen who, as you said, are just savants on this fill in the letters game.
Yeah.
The one college guy and then the older lady a couple episodes later. I'd like to see those two go head to head.
Maybe like an all-star supermarket sweep.
Yeah, like a tournament of champions. Let me ask you this. Maybe this is for the reboot. Would it not make more sense in the big sweep when you bring the cart back to tag off and then your partner goes out into the market?
Give everybody a break.
Why do they just have to stand there?
The only thing I can say, because I do think it's pretty useless that only one person goes through the sweep, is that maybe the other person might grab items that the first person already got because they didn't realize, like they maybe didn't know that they had gotten five things of hair color, for example.
Right.
And so maybe they just have to do it that way so that you don't double up on items.
That's part of knowing your partner and communicating and having a strategy.
Also true.
I was having a conversation with Director of Security, Rusty Cotterman, about this. He pointed out the carts are not built to handle the velocity at which they are pushed.
It's amazing how often people lose control of their carts.
I saw a lady last night who just went headlong into the produce section. Like there was some definite.
Well, you got to run toward the produce, take a left to get to the meat.
Right.
But she was going too fast and just ran right into it.
Just got away from her.
Seen that one.
And then sometimes you get your people who, like, for some inexplicable reason, just do 360s with the cart. They think somehow that makes it better.
Style points.
Yeah, we're not. Greg Louganis isn't grading you for your artistic ability. Why do you do that? Just push the cart. But once you get a lot of hams, turkeys, and dog food in there, those things get heavy.
It gets heavy. It's, again, it's an enjoyable watch.
I have been telling my family this ever since you brought this up and we started watching it. I don't think they need to remake it. They could air those episodes as is right now. And people will come, Ray. People will come.
Yeah.
Maybe catch up with a contestant or two. Like, there's a couple people I'd like to know what happened to them.
Cindy Lou and Cindy Sue.
Yeah.
What are you two minxes up to these days?
So maybe, like, put them in a little box, like, watching themselves. But other than that, you air it just like it is. It's a ratings bonanza.
I will say, tough to look good on Supermarket Sweep when you're running through the aisles looking for the item in the mini sweep. The from behind shot while you're running through the aisles, no one looks good. No one.
Well, especially,
you could have a supermodel in there, and that person wouldn't look good.
Well, if you put the supermodel in high-waisted khakis and a vest shirt.
And white kids.
The only person who looks good running on the show is, no surprise, David Ruprecht when he comes on the set.
Well, here's the difference. David Ruprecht is running towards you, right? Yep. They're showing you the watch. I've discussed this. You can tell that he has a cue on when to do it because he comes out of the, and he's running so jauntily and happily up the aisle. But everybody else you get from behind, it's just, you're not going to look good running from behind like that. We have almost become a Supermarket Sweep podcast.
There's a market for that right when they bring it back just like it is without remaking it.
What a show.
Oh, and that, you know, we got a tweet, and this directly describes my house in the last week or so from BJ Davis, who said, when Brandy grabbed that Chicago Brothers pizza with 1 second left on the clock, our whole house erupted with cheers. Oh, the excitement. That is exactly what happened at our house. And if you don't know what BJ's talking about, you go get to Netflix right now.
A couple things want to get your mind ready for August 3rd on the ACC Network. They're having another session where one team, one school has a day full of content, and that is Carolina's day. And Adam, there's going to be a Carolina Insider Live on the ACC Network.
Whew. Going global.
Yeah. It'll be different from what Adam and I did if you watched the Facebook show that we did in May and June.
Which you did.
Yeah. But it's a lot more feature driven, and Adam and I will kind of be passing things between the features. But Adam and I had a chance to do one of the features. We'll just give you a little sneak peek. With Garrison Brooks, Sterling Manley, and Andrew Playtech in a virtual dunk contest. They weren't doing the dunking. They were grading historic Tar Heel dunks. And, man, we had a lot of fun doing that with those guys.
You know, as I sat here and listened to you describe it, you know what else would have been fun would have been if we had brought the Nerf goal they use in the women's games in there, and you and I do dunks, and then they grade us.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
Next time.
Maybe
for a Carolina Insider Live in the future.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And so we do think that show is going to continue, not on the ACC Network, but that we will, through this year, have a consistent streaming show like we did in the spring. We'll give you more information on that as we get a little bit closer, and we'll continue to tweak the format and do some fun stuff, but looking forward to that. But keep your eye out. August 3rd, ACC Network, there'll be Carolina games, all the stuff that you expect. Plus, it's just a 30-minute show of Carolina Insider Live with a lot of cool features. Big football feature that there's going to be on there as well, some Olympic sports stuff, and this fun thing with basketball. We had a blast doing it and think you'll really enjoy it.
One of our favorite former pod guests, Aaron Mattson, will be on there. So set your DVRs.
Yep. Last thing, at least for me, and I mentioned this earlier, so we have mentioned the website carolinapodfans.com. Adam and I do not have anything to do with the website, but we appreciate all the effort, and there is a lot of effort that goes into it, and it's just a lot of fun facts and audio and stuff about the pod. So I don't even know how, but right before Adam and I started recording today, we went to the website, probably because I check it daily to make sure it's saying nice things about us. No, I'm just joking. And on there, Adam, was the intro to the 2019 Potty Awards. And this is what I was referencing at the beginning of the show about a big mistake that I made. I had totally forgotten that leading up to the 2019 Potty Awards, we kind of did like a little mini year in review where we just kind of pulled off some of the
fun audio items from that past year and did a little montage leading up to the potties. Well, I didn't do that this year, but it was just because I had kind of forgotten that we had done it last year. So, Adam, I am making it my task to do that for this episode. So we're going to put in a little, just a little happy, short year in review from the past year of the pod. And because I liked it, I thought it was fun, and I think it's something that our listeners deserve.
There were some things on the 19 review that I had forgotten.
Yeah, and like I the hover around.
I bet there will be on this too.
So if I can get that done for this episode, you're going to hear it right now.
Bueller. Bueller.
What does Big Brother say that echoes across the glacier? You're such an idiot, Brianna.
I'm Alexander Julian.
See you later, Big Grits.
I want a Dr. Pepper.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Apples and grape nuts.
You're 5 seconds, Adam. Start right now.
Baby back rib, barbecue sauce.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, everybody. I'm North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper. See you later, Big Grits.
You serious, Clark?
Hey, yo, Amy. It's Rusty Williamson.
I go backwards on my posterior on the escalator. Who you
gonna call? Tario manager. He's just walking back and forth. He's like, yeah, Tario, baby, yeah. Retario.
This is John Grisham. See you later, Big Grits.
The steak that I ordered at this restaurant, the aristocrat of tenderness.
Dem Arby's boys, wheels up. Skeet, skirt.
You're simply the best. Better than all the rest. Better than anyone. Anyone I've ever met.
Wax on.
I thought you were saying from Learfield, I'm G College.
Hello, good luck. The heels are up by one.
In the Amazing Tyler's business plan, it says tell crowd no on giant ladder.
Oh, and pretend to walk off yeah. court as though you it's not possible.
And then in parentheses, it says crowd will encourage you to do so.
And the woman who said Harrison, the shirt said Harrisonburg is Ralph Sampson's home. That is worthy of a shirt.
Do you have it made?
Oh, it was made. It was orange.
Like screen printed?
Yeah.
Guys, I think we just need to be informed. Let's not try to be cute here. Let's just be informative. Harrisonburg is Ralph Sampson's home. That feels right.
Hey, what's up? I'm Dan Cortez. And see you later, Big Grit.
Have we talked about people who put the fries in their Frosty?
UNC Archives tweeted of an old Ramsey's mascot.
Oh, boy.
And I have to say, it's terrifying.
They handed John Wallace the microphone. 29,000 people are on their feet. First words he says, Imantros, I see you.
And I found it in the form of reruns of Supermarket Sweep.
From brand new Pod World Headquarters.
He was singing Let It Go with every bit of himself and of his soul and of his heart. And he was making all these moves to it to the point where Adam, the cold doesn't bother him anyway. He gave it like the ooh, ooh, like the throat slash. Get out of here, cold. Don't bother me anyway. We're Gonzaga. If I didn't have time to get it done, you will hear it next show, and it will be good. I hope. Adam, do you have anything else?
I do not.
Okay. So we are going to have a double see you later, Big Grits. We will have Katie Hogue and Harris Barton both helped send us out. We'll be back next week. Have another great guest. We do have a game rewatch that we think we're going to do soon. We'll have that.
Should we tell people what it is so that they can watch perhaps over the weekend and be ready?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Take a journey back possibly put on your pleated khakis to 2005. UNC Duke in the Smith Center. That will be the next game rewatch.
I think the sad part is, Adam, I'm not so sure that pleated khakis were still as prevalent as they were, say, in the supermarket sweep days, but you and I were hanging on to them.
Well, I just wanted to see if I could prolong that a little longer because I already had so many pairs of pleated khakis.
No, that's right. It's like, I just have to throw these out now?
I fully remember making the transition to the flat front. It was a big step.
My wife tried to get me to do it for like a year or two before I actually finally decided. I should have taken the hint.
I thought it looked kind of weird. Not as cool as the pleated ones. Yeah. Why would I want to do that?
How roomy these are.
I've been wearing these pleats my whole life, and now you're just going to smooth them out?
What is this madness? So that'll be coming up in a couple weeks and soon. Now, as with everything in life, kind of depending on what happens, but if we feel good about fall sports, then we're going to get to our twice a week schedule here in the next couple of weeks. We'll have to wait and see.
Or so.
Yeah. But for now, this we know for sure, that Katie Hogue and Harris Barton and the RZA, that'd be a heck of a three-man basketball team, are going to get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Katie Hogue, and see you later, Big Grits.
Hey, I'm Harris Barton. I'll see you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
Box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.